Kitty, Chapter 12. Perhaps an hour had passed before a gentleman walking his dog had found the bodies on the bridge and contacted the authorities. An ambulance had arrived soon afterwards, and Kitty and Jacob were removed from public view. She had woken in the ambulance. A small window of light switched on far away, and for a time she watched it approaching on a long, slow curve through the darkness. Little forms moved inside the light, but she couldn't make them out. Her ears felt as if they were stuffed with cork. The light grew steadily. Then with a sudden rush, and her eyes were open, sound returned to her ears with a painful pop. A woman's face peered down at her. "Try not to move. You'll be all right."
"What? What?"
"Try not to speak." With sudden panic, memory returned.
"That monster! That monkey!"
She struggled, found her arms pinned to the trolley.
"Please, dear, don't. You'll be all right."
She lay back, every muscle rigid.
"Jacob!"
"Your friend. He's here, too."
"He's all right?"
"Just try to rest." And whether it was the motion of the ambulance or the weariness deep inside her, she had soon slept, waking in the hospital to find nurses cutting her clothes away. The front of her jacket and shorts were charred and crispy, flaking into the air like wisps of burned newspaper. Once attired in a flimsy white shift, she was for a short while the focus of attention. Doctors swarmed around her like wasps round jam, checking her pulse, respiration, and temperature. Then they suddenly drew back, and Kitty was left lying isolated in the empty ward. After a long while, a nurse passed by.
"We've informed your parents," she said. "They're coming to take you home."
Kitty looked at her with incomprehension. The woman halted.
"You're quite well," she said. "The black tumbler must have just missed you, caught you only with its aftershock. You're a very lucky girl."
This took a moment to sink in.
"Then Jacob's all right, too?"
"He wasn't so lucky, I'm afraid."
Terror welled up inside her.
"What do you mean? Where is he?"
"He's nearby. He's being cared for."
She began to cry.
"But he was standing beside me. He's got to be all right."
"I'll bring you something to eat, dear. That'll make you feel better. Why don't you try reading something to take your mind off it? There are magazines on the table."
Kitty did not read the magazines. When the nurse had gone, she slipped out of bed and stood unsteadily on the cool wooden floor. Then, step by step, but growing in confidence in her strength, she crossed the quiet ward, stepping through bright patches of sunlight under the tall, arched windows, till she came to the corridor outside. On the opposite side was a closed door. A curtain had been drawn across the inside of its window. Checking quickly left and right, Kitty flitted forwards like a ghost until she stood with her fingers on the handle. She listened, but the room beyond was silent. Kitty turned the handle and went in. It was an airy room, small, with a single bed in it and a large window that overlooked the roofscapes of South London. The sunlight blazed a yellow diagonal across the bed, snipping it neatly in two. The upper half of the bed was in shade, the figure lying asleep there likewise. The room was heavy with the normal hospital smells, medicine, iodine, antiseptics, but underlying them all was another scent, a smoky one. Kitty shut the door, stole on the balls of her feet across the floor, hovered by the bed. She looked down at Jacob, her eyes studded with tears. Her first thought was anger at the doctors for shaving off his hair. Why did they have to make him bald? It would take an age to regrow it, and Mrs. Herneck doted on his long black curls. He looked so strange, particularly with the odd shadows thrown upon his face. Only then did she realize what the shadows were. Where his hair had protected him, Jacob's skin was its normal swarthy color. Everywhere else, from the base of his neck right up to his hairline, it was seared or stained with roughly vertical, wavy streaks of black and gray, the color of ash and burned wood. There wasn't an inch of his ordinary skin color left on his face, except faintly at the eyebrows. These had been shaved away. Two little pink-brown crescents showed there. But his lips, his eyelids, the lobes of his ears were all discolored. It was more like a tribal mask, an effigy made for a carnival parade, than a living face. Under the bedclothes his chest rose and fell raggedly. A little wheezing sound came from between his lips. Kitty reached out and touched a hand lying on the blanket. His palms, which he had raised to ward off the smoke, were the same streaked colour as his face. Her touch aroused a response. The head turned from side to side. Discomfort flickered across the livid face. The grey lips parted. They moved as if they were trying to speak. Kitty took her hand away, but bent closer.
"Jacob?"
The eyes flicked open with such suddenness that she could not prevent herself from jerking back in shock, colliding painfully with the corner of the bedside table. She leaned forwards again, though instantly aware he was not conscious. The eyes gazed straight ahead, wide and sightless. Against the black-grey skin, they stood out pale and clear, like two milky-white opal stones. It was then she wondered if he were blind. When the doctors arrived, bringing with them Mr. and Mrs. Herneck, and Kitty's mother clamouring behind, they found her kneeling by the bedside, hands clasping Jacob's, her head resting against the blanket. It was only with difficulty that they prized her free. At home, Kitty prized herself in turn from the anguished questioning of her parents and climbed the stairs to the landing of the little house. For many minutes she stood in front of the mirror looking at herself, at her ordinary, unblemished face. She saw the smooth skin, the thick black hair, the lips and eyebrows, the freckles on her hands, the mole on the side of her nose. It was all exactly the same as always, as it simply had no right to be. The mechanism of the law, such as it was, swung laboriously into action. Even while Jacob still lay unconscious in the hospital bed, the police called on Kitty's family to take a statement, much to her parents' anxiety. Kitty recounted what she knew, tersely and without elaboration, a young policewoman taking notes the while.
"We hope there'll be no trouble, officer," Kitty's father said as she finished.
"We wouldn't want that," her mother added. "Really, we wouldn't."
"There will be an investigation," the policewoman said, still scribbling.
"How will you find him?" Kitty asked. "I don't know his name, and I've forgotten the name of the thing."
"We can trace him by his car. If he crashed, as you say, the vehicle will have been picked up by some garage or other, taken to be serviced. Then we can establish the truth of the matter."
"You've got the truth," Kitty said flatly.
"We don't want any trouble," her father said again.
"We'll be in touch," the policewoman said. She snapped her notebook shut. The car, a Rolls-Royce silver thruster, was quickly located. The identity of its owner followed. He was a Mr. Julius Tallow, a magician working for Mr. Underwood at the Ministry of Internal Affairs. While not particularly senior, he was well-connected and a familiar figure around the city. He cheerfully admitted that it had been he who had unleashed the black tumbler on the two children in Wandsworth Park. Indeed, he wanted it known that he was proud to have done so. He had been peacefully driving past when he had been attacked by the individuals concerned. They had smashed his windscreen with a missile so that he lost control, then approached him aggressively, wielding two long staves of wood. It was evident that they intended to rob him. He had acted in self-defense there and then, striking them down before they had a chance to attack. He considered his response a restrained one, given the circumstances.
"Well, he's obviously lying," Kitty said. "We were nowhere near the road to start with. And if he acted in self-defense at the roadside, how does he explain us being found up at the bridge? Did you arrest him?"
The policewoman looked surprised.
"He's a magician. It isn't that simple. He denies your charges. The case will be heard at the Courts of Justice next month. If you wish to take the matter further, you must attend and speak against Mr. Tallow then."
"Good," Kitty said. "I can't wait."
"She won't be attending," her father said. "She's done enough damage already."
Kitty snorted, but said nothing. Her parents abhorred the idea of confrontation with the magicians, and strongly disapproved of her act of trespass in the park. On her safe return from hospital, they had seemed almost angrier with her than with Tallow, a state of affairs that had awoken her strong resentment.
"Well, it's up to you," the policewoman said. "I'll send the details anyway."
For a week or more, there was little word on Jacob's condition in the hospital. Visits were forbidden. In an effort to get news, Kitty finally plucked up the courage to trudge down the road to the Herneck house, for the first time since the incident. She walked up the familiar pathway diffidently, unsure of her reception. Guilt weighed heavily on her mind.
But Mrs. Herneck was polite enough. Indeed, she clasped Kitty to her ample bosom, and hugged her tightly before ushering her indoors. She led her into the kitchen, over which, as always, the smell of cooking hung strong and pungent. Bowls of half-chopped vegetables sat in the centre of the trestle table. Across the wall stretched the great oak dresser, laden with gaudily decorated plates. Odd utensils of every description hung from the dark walls. Jacob's grandmama sat in her high chair beside the great black stove, stirring a saucepan of soup with a long-handled spoon. All was as normal, down to the last familiar crack in the ceiling. Except that Jacob was not there. Kitty sat at the table and accepted a mug of strongly scented tea. With a heavy sigh and a creak of protesting wood, Mrs. Herneck sat opposite her. For some minutes she did not speak, in itself a unique occurrence. Kitty, for her part, did not feel she could start the conversation. Up by the stove, Jacob's grandmama continued stirring the steaming soup. At last, Mrs. Herneck took a loud slurp of tea, swallowed, spoke abruptly. "He woke up today," she said. "Oh, is he? He's as well as could be expected, which isn't well." "No, but if he's woken, that's good, isn't it? He'll be okay." Mrs. Herneck made an expressive face. "Ha! It was the black tumbler. His face will not recover." Kitty felt the tears welling. "Not at all. The scorching is too fierce. You should know this. You have seen it." "But why should he?" Kitty furrowed her brows. "I mean, I'm all right, and I was hit too. We were both."
"You? You were not hit!"
Mrs. Herneck tapped her fingers against her face and looked at Kitty with such ferocious condemnation that Kitty shrank back against the kitchen wall and did not dare continue. Mrs. Herneck eyed her for a long moment with a basilisk's gaze, then resumed sipping her tea. Kitty spoke in a small voice.
I'm so sorry, Mrs. Herneck."
"Do not be sorry. You did not hurt my son."
"But is there no way of changing it back?" Kitty said. "I mean, surely, if the doctors don't have treatments, the magicians could do something."
A shake of the head.
"The effects are permanent. Even if they weren't, they would not choose to help us."
Kitty scowled. "They must help us. How can they not? What we did was an accident. What he did was a calculated crime."
Her anger rose within her.
"He wanted to kill us, Mrs. Herneck. The courts must see that. Jacob and I can tell them next month at the hearing. He'll be better by then, won't he? We'll shoot Tallow's story full of holes, and they can take him to the tower. Then they'll find some way of helping Jacob's face, Mrs. Herneck. You'll see."
Even amid the passion of her speech, she was aware how hollow her words sounded. But Mrs. Herneck's next words were unexpected, nevertheless.
"Jacob will not be going to the hearing, dear, and nor should you. Your parents do not want you to, and they are quite right. It is not wise."
"But we have to, if we're to tell them."
Mrs. Herneck reached across the table and laid her great pink hand upon Kitty's own.
"What do you think will happen to Herneck and Sons if Jacob engages in a lawsuit with a magician?" "Well, Mr. Herneck would lose everything in 24 hours. They'd close us down, or transfer their trade to Jaroslav's, or another of our competitors. Besides," she smiled sadly, "why bother? We wouldn't have any chance of winning."
For a moment Kitty was too stunned to reply.
"But I've been requested to appear," she said. "And so has Jacob."
Mrs. Herneck shrugged.
"Such an invitation can be easily declined. The authorities would prefer not to be troubled by such a trifling matter. Two common children, it is a waste of their precious time. Take my advice, dear. Do not go to the courts. No good can come of it."
Kitty stared at the calloused table-top.
"But that means letting him, Mr. Tallow, off, scot-free," she said quietly. "I can't. It wouldn't be right."
Mrs. Herneck stood suddenly, her chair screeching against the tiles on the floor.
"It is not a question of right, girl," she said. "It is a question of common sense. And anyway—"
She seized a bowl of chopped cabbage in one hand and advanced to the stove.
"It is not entirely certain Mr. Tallow is going to get off quite as freely as you think."
With a jerk of the wrists, she tipped the cabbage hissing and bubbling into a vat of boiling water. By the side of the stove, Jacob's grandmama nodded and grinned through the steam, like a goblin, stirring, stirring, stirring the soup with her knotted, bony hand.